Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. It's so good having you and being here for another great conversation. You know, these shows are just so much fun for me and enlightening. I love having the opportunity to have these in-depth conversations with inspiring people, and I'm thrilled that you are here joining me during this great opportunity to have another conversation. If you are listening for the first time, I want to welcome you to What Women Must Know. If you'd like to get the archives so you don't miss any of these fantastic conversations, you can just go to my Facebook page, like me there, at What Women Must Know. Or you can go to my website, which is drcherylselman.com, and opt in there. And I will send all of these archive shows directly to you, and there will be some other great information, education that I send as well to my community. So hope you'll be joining me, either liking me on Facebook or opting into drcherylselman.com. So we have a really inspirational guest, and we're going to be talking to James Templeton today. And he, this is the title of his book, but it's really the title of his story, of his life. I Used to Have Cancer, How I Found My Way Back to Health. Such a profound conversation we're having today. And I just want to share a little bit about James's bio and background. James Templeton is a 35-year-plus cancer survivor who healed himself from a terminal diagnosis with the use of alternative medicine and healing modalities. He has chronicled that journey in his book, I Used to Have Cancer, How I Found My Way Back to Health. And as the visionary founder of the Templeton Wellness Foundation, James has since utilized his wisdom and experience to helping others achieve optimum health and wellness. The foundation is a rich resource of resources for anyone fighting cancer, and including a library of one-on-one video interviews of long-term cancer survivors to share what they are doing to successfully fight cancer, defy the odds, and remain cancer-free, vibrant, and healthy for life. So we have a great conversation in store for you, and I am here to welcome James Templeton to the show. So, James, it's so great to have you. Thanks for being on What Women Must Know today.
Well, thank you, Dr. Cheryl. It's great to be with you, and you know, it's been a while since I've seen you, but it's always good to talk to you, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I am looking forward to our conversation, too, because I knew you had a story, but I didn't know what it was. So I'm going to find out this inspirational journey that you've been on, and I know it will be a source of inspiration to all my listeners as well. So let's just jump right into this journey. So James, tell us about your story. Tell us what happened 35 years ago to you.
Well, you know, it's going to be, since I was first diagnosed with cancer, it's going to be 37 years this year. But you know, it was quite an interesting thing that happened to me. And I was just this guy. I was living in Texas. I'm a fifth-generation Texan. And I thought that everything was going great for me. I was a young entrepreneur, and I had several businesses, and I had a little daughter that wasn't even 2 years old yet. And, you know, I just thought everything was couldn't get much better than it was for me. And I was one of these guys that exercised a lot, too, and I thought I was in good shape. I thought that, you know, I was, you know, in better shape than most, and I ran all the time and worked out, and I was one of these guys you'd see running down the highway or on the, everywhere you'd go, people would say, man, this guy's everywhere running. And so, you know, I'd run about 60 miles a week and you know, just thought I was, you know, keeping myself in good shape. And the reason I was doing this was because my father and my grandfather both died of heart disease at a very young age. And I thought that if I could do this, then maybe I wouldn't have to go through the same thing. And, you know, there was a chance for me. And So I continued to, you know, try to do that, and I was eating pretty much a vegetarian diet, and a lot of salads and a lot of things like that to try to keep my weight down so I could run faster. And I was running in these weekend fun runs and half marathons and a lot of these 10Ks and things like that a lot. So I was trying to stay in shape, and in Texas it's very hot, so you have to run in the heat. So anyway, I thought everything was going good, and one day I went to the office, and I sat down, and I grabbed a newspaper, and I was very, very shocked because there was a gentleman's name mentioned on that newspaper that I had been looking up to and been reading about, and his name was Jim Fix. And Jim Fix was a guy, he was a kind of a fitness guru back in those days, and he was a runner, and he talked about the importance of cardiovascular health and running and endurance athletes, how good it was for people. So he felt kind of like he could do just about anything and get away with it as long as he got out there and hit the pavement on a regular basis. So that's what I was doing. But anyway, I read his name on there, and it says Jim Fix dies while running with a heart attack. And I was like shocked because this is the guy I'd been really kind of following. So all of a sudden, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I gotta get myself checked out. I might not be doing the right thing after all. And I made an appointment to go see a doctor to get a stress test done and get my heart checked out and everything. And I go in to this doctor, and he puts me on the treadmill, and it was a very thorough, appointment, and he checked me out, and he thought that I was in really good shape because he said I broke the record on the treadmill test. He said he'd never seen anyone that had done so well. And I was just, he couldn't even get me out of breath because I'd still, running for years doing this. And he says to me, he says, whatever you're doing, you keep doing it because you're in tremendous shape. He says, you're going to live a long time as long as you keep doing this. He says, you're just in a picture of health as far as I can see. And I felt really good after that. And I thought, well, I guess I'm doing the right thing for me. And he says on the way out, he says, there's only one thing that I can see. He says, there's a mole on your back. And he says, I don't think there's anything to it. But he says, this mole looks a little suspicious to me. It's a little, funny shaped, and it's got a different look to it. And he says, I think I'd just get it checked out at a dermatologist's office when you get a chance. He said, I wouldn't worry about it. It's probably nothing. Well, I didn't think much about it. And so, after a few weeks, I said, well, I guess I better go get tested, just see what that is, just get someone to look at it. And I go into the dermatologist's office, and he comes in, and he starts to look at it, and I mean, he about had a fit. He jumped up and down, and he was all excited, and he says, oh, my goodness. He says, I think you have melanoma. And it just scared me to death. I didn't know a lot about melanoma, but I had heard it wasn't good. So he got my attention real quick, and he started going on about how he just knew it was melanoma, and he was going to probably have to do extensive surgery and all this stuff. I didn't like his bedside manner, and it scared me so badly. And here I was thinking I had everything going for me. Now I'm scared to death. It's just instantly those words that you don't want to hear. And he started talking like that. So I decided to go home and decided to get another opinion. And I got home and I made a call, and I got an appointment to see a dermatologist that I had seen before in the past. So I go to his office. He says, James, he says, it looks a little suspicious to me, but he said, it's probably nothing. My wife had melanoma, actually, and she had stage 1 melanoma, and it really hasn't given her any more trouble. We removed it. There's no, hadn't had a problem with it. And I thought, well, that's hopefully that's what it is, if it is anything. And he says, but, you know, let me send you to the best of the best. There's a doctor here, and this was in Houston, Texas. And he says, there's a doctor here, and he's renowned. And if you have to go see anybody for something like this, this is the guy. And he will know exactly what it is. And I'm going to get you an appointment. And he's a friend of mine, and I think this would be the best way to go. Well, I felt, well, I'm fortunate to be able to see the best of the best. So I go in to see this guy, and probably in a couple of days I got an appointment. And I go to see this guy, and he looks at me, and he goes, well, it looks a little suspicious to me also. Then what he said was, look, let's remove it and see exactly what it is. He says, that's the only way we're going to know. So he went on and took a big chunk out of my back, and where it was on my lower back. And he took it out, and he says, look, don't worry, go home. I'll get back to you in a few days, and we'll let you know what it is. And, you know, I went home. Of course, I worried. I was walking around in circles and was scared to death. And, you know, I was one of these people that was used to being pretty happy-go-lucky. But, you know, this was not for me, sitting around wondering if I had cancer or not. So he calls me, and it was like 2 weeks later. And I didn't know why it was taking so long, but it was 2 weeks later. He calls me, and he says, James, he says, I got some good news and I got some bad news. And it's funny how I remember it like it was yesterday. And he says, the good news, he says, it's melanoma. And I said, good news? How could that be good news? You know, and he goes, well, wait a minute. He says, the thing that's good about it is we think we got it all in that area, that incision area around the perimeter area. We didn't see any signs of cancer around that area on the outside. So we think we got it all. I mean, he took probably a 3-inch square chunk out of me. And he says, you know, so that's good news. But he says the bad news, it's very deep. The melanoma is very deep. And he says that's a problem, and we're going to have to keep a real eye on this because this is stage 4 melanoma. He says, chances are it's going to spread. It's going to end up in different parts of your body and organs, your lymphatic system, and all that. And he says the only way to go forward with this is you got to come in every 3 months, and we'll check it out to see if there's any issues. We'll check your lymph nodes and all that. And he says, just go home. Don't worry. There's nothing you can do. Just you know, come back in 3 months. He says, hopefully you'll never see it again. Well, I, you know, that about did me in because now I had melanoma, and you know, I didn't care about going to work. I didn't care about anything. I was not the same person. My wife definitely didn't like the new me. I was not easy to be around, and you know, after a while, my wife decided to leave me, and kind of left me hanging a little bit, but. You know, she, I guess, couldn't deal with all the stress of it, and who knows, maybe she was wanting to leave me anyway. I don't know. But she, you know, I thought everything was fine. But anyway, that's how it goes. And I was, after that, I just was floored. I didn't know, care at times whether I lived or died. But I kept going to the doctor, and after 2 appointments, 6 months later, no sign of cancer. And he goes, that's good, it's good. So I got to thinking, well, maybe I won't see it again. And, you know, before I knew it, I was taking a shower and I found this lump in my groin area. And it was, you know, the size of a large marble. And I called him up and he says, listen, he said, it's probably nothing, but why don't you come in and we'll check it out and see what it is. And I went in. I was living in Dallas at the time. And I was working at a business. I had my own business, but after my wife left me, I went up to Dallas to kind of get away from the stress of it and work with some friends with another business. So I'm there, and I flew down to Houston just for the day to get checked out. And he says, you know, I think we better check you in the hospital first thing in the morning and remove this. Let's see exactly what it is. He said, it's probably nothing. It's probably just a little maybe you bumped yourself or something, and you know it's irritated and lymph node. But he says, we need to get, you know, check it out for sure. Well, I went in and I woke up in the hospital, and after the surgery, I knew I was in trouble because I had these huge bandages all over my groin area. And shortly after that, the doctor comes in and he says, James, he says, I'm sorry, but the cancer spread to your lymphatic system. He says, that's not what we wanted. He says, the cancer is spread there, and we're going to have to, really be careful now and really get serious. He said, I removed all your major lymph nodes in that area, and he says, you're going to have to recover from the surgery for probably 3 weeks here in the hospital. And he says, then I want you to do 80 treatments of experimental chemotherapy. And he says, this is going to be, ongoing, 5 treatments at a time, and you come back every 2 months until there's 80 treatments. And he says, that's where we're going to start. And he says, you'll have to use a lymph drainage pump because we don't want you to lose your leg, because all this lymph drainage is going to affect your leg, your right leg. He said, so you're going to have to spend a lot of time taking care of yourself. And then I'm like, oh, you know, it's like, so what are my chances with this? You know, what's it look like? What's the future going to look like? You know, and he didn't want to tell me. But he says to me, he says, well, from my experience, you've probably got a 20% chance of surviving 3 to 5 years, he says, if you can get through these treatments. And that's like, if you can get through these 80 treatments without, I guess, dying. And he says, if you don't do them, I don't think you're going to have very long at all, because this is an aggressive type of cancer. And, that's all we know to do. Well, you know, I was very, very upset after this, and very fearful and very depressed. And, you know, so I laid around there in the hospital for a few days, you know, just thinking, you know, what am I going to do? There's got to be something else I can do. And I just was, you know, kind of in one of these moods, like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be around that much longer, you know, if I don't find something. So I'm laying there in the hospital room, and all of a sudden I get a phone call. And this phone call just came out of the blue. And this phone call was from a minister of a church that I went to from time to time. And I knew the fellow. He was a very nice man. He was a runner like me. He was older than me, but a tough guy. He played professional baseball, and I looked up to him, and he calls me, and he says, James, he goes, if anybody can beat this cancer, I know you can. He says, I want you to know we've been praying for you. He said, I've been praying for you. People in the church have prayed for you. Lots of people in town. I lived in a small town, had been. And he says, we really have been thinking about you. And he says, if anybody can beat this cancer, you can. And then he said some words. He says, you're a tough guy. He says, you know, you don't give in to this. And he says, you beat this SOB in cancer. That's what he said. He said it the other way. But it shocked me, because I'm sitting there, and this guy, I never heard him talk like that, and he got my attention. He really got my attention, and I just felt that, I had to do something. And the next thing I knew, I was praying. I was praying, and I wasn't a guy that prayed a lot, but I was praying, and I felt like every cell in my body was praying. I felt like it's almost like an out-of-body experience. I've never felt like that before. And I was just praying to God to help me. I had to find something else to do, and I was desperate. And I had never been that desperate before. And after that prayer, it was probably 20 minutes later, I got a knock on the hospital door. And I said, come in, and the door was semi-open. And here comes a friend of mine from college that I hadn't seen in 7 years. He walks in, he's waving these papers in his hand, and he's telling me that he's sorry to hear about me being there, and that, you know, one of our old friends called and told him I was, you know, in the hospital with cancer and, you know, all that. And he says, you know, I got an article from a friend of a friend of mine at the office, and he said this article is about a fellow that cured himself of cancer using a diet and lifestyle. And he says, you know, I don't know much about it, but I thought you could read it and maybe it would give you some inspiration. And I said, before I even got it in my hand, I said, I'm going to do what he did. And he says, well, you don't even know what it is. I said, I don't care right now. I know I'm supposed to do that, because I knew it came from the higher place, and I was going to do this diet. So anyway, I read it. It was about a fellow that had cured himself on the diet by using a macrobiotic diet and lifestyle. And I'd never heard of macrobiotic diet or anything like that. And I said to my friend, I said, can you go out and get this book for me? Because I want to read this book, and really, because this is really interesting to me, and I think this is going to help me, you know, get over this cancer somehow or some way. So he went and got the book. The book was Confessions of a Kamikaze Cowboy. And it was by Dirk Benedict, which was on TV, and I knew who he was. He was on a team called the A-Team, and I don't know if you remember that, Cheryl, or not. But, and he was that the younger guy, that was a good-looking, blonde-headed guy in the show, and he had had prostate cancer, and he found out about macrobiotics and Michio Kushi. And he decided that he was going to do this, and he wasn't going to, you know, go the mainstream conventional medicine route. So I got to thinking. I said, well, if old Dirk can do it, then I can do it. He was a Montana boy that grew up on a ranch. I grew up in Texas, and, you know, nearly everybody I knew was a rancher. My grandfathers were ranchers, you know, so it just... And I had a little small ranch myself, so I could relate to this guy. And I thought, well, my gosh, you know, I can do it if he can do it. And so anyway, I got excited, and I got the book. My friend brought the book back to me. And he says to me, he says, look, you know, I hope this works for you. And I said, it's going to work for me, because if it'll work for him, it'll work for me. That's kind of I started developing some hope. And so, anyway, I couldn't put the book down, and here I was feeling miserable and on painkillers and probably morphine and everything else back then. I know I was taking it on and off, and here I was out of it. But I tell you what, I was reading that book, and I was getting more and more excited. And the next day, the next morning, I got another knock on that hospital door. And it was my stepmother that pretty much raised me, and she raised me, and she had a book in her hand, and she comes in, and she has this book, and she's waving this book around, and she's saying, look, I've got this book here. It's very interesting. One of our relatives sent it to me to give to you. And she says, this is really something I think you're going to find interesting. So I looked at it, and it was about vitamin C and cancer, and it was written by Linus Pauling. Well, I didn't know Linus Pauling back then, who he was, but I learned real quick, and I got very excited because I saw, you know, I read in the book about people that had terminally ill people with cancer, and there were people that as long as they took high-dose vitamin C, they did pretty well, and a lot of people were like basically on their deathbed, and they would stay around taking this high amounts of vitamin C. And then when they would stop the vitamin C, a lot of times they wouldn't make it. But people that stayed on it for long enough times, a lot of them would get well. So I got very excited, and I made up my mind that, hey, I'm going to do this macrobiotic diet, the macrobiotic lifestyle and diet, and then I'm going to do the vitamin C. And if this doesn't work for me, it's not going to work for anybody because I'm going to give it 150%. And I started to develop that kind of that fighter's mentality, you know, that got getting rid of that feeling sorry for myself, that fear and that feeling that you know, there's nothing I can do and all that. So the next day, it's funny how it all happened. In 3 days, I got 3 knocks on the door that I think really saved my life to this day. And it was remarkable. But I got another knock on the door the next morning in the hospital. And this fella comes through the door, and he was a psychotherapist from the hospital. And he says to me, he says, James, he says, I've heard you've been very depressed, and, you know, you're not feeling really good about, you know, the future going forward, and I want to know if I can come talk to you. Maybe I can help you. And he says, I'd like to come visit you in the morning. And I said, okay. Well, I got to reading more and more about this macrobiotic diet and everything. And when this guy came back the next morning, I said to him, I said, listen, have you ever heard of the macrobiotic diet? Have you ever heard of the, you know, that at all? And he says, excuse me. And he turned around and started going towards the door. I thought, oh, I said the wrong thing. I'll never see him again. You know, and he went outside in the hall and he shut the door. And because the door was open, partially open. And he, I guess he's looking around or something, and he shut the door and he comes back in. And he sat down next to me and he said, listen, I do know about the macrobiotic diet and lifestyle. And he says, but I won't tell you what I know unless you promise me you won't tell anyone that we've had this conversation. I don't want to lose my job, my retirement pension, and all that. He says, listen, I've heard a lot of good things, and I've talked to people that have done very well on this diet. He said, it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of dedication. You got to roll up your sleeves, and you've got to, you know, give it your all. And if you don't, you won't do as well, so you have to do that. He says, there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. You got to do it the right way. He says, I tried to do it just for my general health. He says, but I couldn't stick with it. It takes so much work and time and cooking and all that. He says, it was a little too much for me, but I wanted to do it. It's just I couldn't do it. But he says, but I think someone that's really made up their mind and is dedicated can do very well on this. And he says, by the way, you don't seem very depressed. I thought you were going to be really depressed. And, you know, I was excited now because here this guy comes in and shutting the door and in privacy. And, you know, I'm like, I'm really on to something now. I'm really on to something. So I'm like, boy, I hit the jackpot here. I mean, you know, that's how I started to feel. And all of a sudden this poor me was like, get out of the way. I'm coming through, you know, kind of mentality. And I thought, well, I'll do the diet, the lifestyle. I'll do all this vitamin C. And I'm going to do all this chemo and everything, too. I'll do it all. If a little's good, a lot's better. Because I was, you know, I was really going to do it. So after I got over the surgery enough to go do this chemo, I did the chemo. And it was terrible. You know, they elevated my temperature with typhoid serum. And then they get it up as high as they can, basically, without killing you. And then you're laying there in the hospital bed for 8 hours, and they drip the chemotherapy down into your vein, and you're laying there, and I mean, you just ache all over, and you felt so bad, and it makes you nauseous and sick, and your hair starts falling out and all that. But I did 5 treatments, and I thought, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever done, you know, on top of the surgery. But I thought, well, I'll go home, I'm going to start trying to eat this diet, and I'll try to, you know, barrel into it and just, you know, and do the best I can, and then I'll continue. As soon as I get a little stronger, then I'll really dig into it. So anyway, I started. I wasn't heavy duty into it by the time I had to go back and do more treatments. So I go back in, do these treatments. They must have tripled it or something, because I never felt so bad in my life. I felt like I had, you know, had the worst case of flu about 10 times over. It was terrible. And I just felt achy, and I was losing weight already. I was, you know, like had lost a lot of weight from the surgery and the chemotherapy and already. And I'm there, and a doctor comes in, and I said, "Doctor, I'm so sick. I can't keep anything in my stomach. I'm, you know, I've never been this, felt this terrible. It's just terrible." And he goes, "Well, I'm sorry, but you know, your body's not responding to the chemotherapy." He says, "You know, either someone responds or they don't. We want you to respond." He says, "So that's not good." But I said, "Well, isn't there something else I can do? Because I just never felt this bad, and I feel like I'm wasting away." And, you know, every night I was hearing people commotion in the hallways, and people were dying in the halls. You know, they were rolling them down, and they were having chemotherapy. And some of them I'd talked to like a week or two earlier and, you know, met them in the hallway, and they would say, "Well, I can't wait to get this chemo and get out of here." But I guess it weakened them so much that a lot of them were dying of, not from the cancer, but from pneumonia and kidney failure and things like that. That's what I found out. So I thought, man, I'm going to end up like that if I don't figure something out here. This is not good. And I told the doctor, I said, "Listen, what would you do if it was your son or your daughter?" He'd say, "Well, I'd do the same thing." He says, "That's all I know to do." And I said, "But, you know, even if they got this sick, you'd do it." He goes, "Oh, yeah, that's what I would do." I said, "You know, this stuff could kill somebody, you know? It's like, it could kill me." He goes, "Well..." He says, "You know, we're all going to die someday." And, man, when he said that, it made me so mad. And I got up and I raised up in the bed and I said, "Listen here, you..." I told him off. I'll just say that. I said a lot of words that I hadn't said in a long time. And I said, "Listen here, if I could get out of bed right now, I'd tear you apart." I said, "You're trying to take my hope and away from me." And he says, and I said, you know, and to him, you know, like, you know, just, I was just white, you know, and this guy turned around, was red. I mean, he turned around like he'd seen a ghost or something and ran out the door. And this was this big shot doctor. And anyway, he goes out, and I never saw him again, ever, after that, because two nights later, I snuck out of the hospital at 2 a.m. And I decided I wasn't going to do it anymore, and I'd had it. I was walking away, and I was going to do all this, you know, diet and lifestyle and vitamin C, and I was going to be open to anything else I could find, and I was going to give it 150%, like this psychotherapist said, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way. Well, I was going to be set the example, and that's what I did. I got out of there, and I left and went to my mother's house, my stepmother's house, because it was on the way towards Dallas, and you know, I was weak and I didn't have the energy to do anything. So I went to her house for a couple of weeks and tried to recover a little bit, and got really serious about this diet and everything, and I'm still here after all these years. And you know, I learned a lot on my journey. I learned a lot, but it's amazing how those three knocks changed my life. And it just, you know, whether it was from God, from the higher power, from just happened out of the blue, who knows? But my friend was driving around, you know, down in that area, and just something was telling him to stop. You know, he didn't know if he should or not, and he said it just like he just, you know, hold in there like you're thinking sometimes about someone and they call you kind of thing. And, you know, it's just one of those spur-of-the-moment things. And he wanted to see me, but it's amazing what can happen to you. But that's kind of how it all started for me. And I'd love to share some of the other things that I discovered and the things that I did back then, and a little more about the diet if you think that people would like to hear about it.
Well, there's so much to explore here. You know, I'm listening to your story, and aside Well, let's just say it started with that trauma. I mean, initially when you were told that mole was melanoma, it's almost like you had a post-traumatic stress event out of that conversation, right? It was, everything changed. But there were so many profound things that were happening to you. I mean, you had this. You had your wife and child leave, mm-hmm. that's a trauma on top of another trauma. So that weakened your system even further, right?
Yeah. So after that, I didn't care for a while there. And, I remember laying in the hospital and I would think about, my wife and my little girl and thinking about what was going on with me and what the doctor said about, my chances of living for very long and all the things I had to go through now, and and just basically I had to walk away from everything that I had done, my career, my life, my financial security, everything. I walked away from it all because I knew if I didn't, then I probably wouldn't be around, because this was an aggressive kind of cancer. And I did have some surgery, and I had 10 treatments of the chemotherapy, but no way I was going to do any more, because I got down to from 175 all the way down to 120, in that time. I mean, it's just like skin and bones, it wasn't good, and I was weak, and I knew I had to do something, and sometimes you have to listen to yourself and really listen to your intuition. And, this gave me so much hope and excitement that I didn't have 10 people that said they got well from using this diet. I had one, but no one had to say, oh, now you should think about this. No, I just knew. It's like something inside of me says, this is what you're supposed to do. And, and I usually don't make quick decisions about anything like that, but it was, amazing. And, when I started this macrobiotic diet, and you don't hear as much about that diet anymore, because it's not, back then it was, pretty popular, and this was, in the mid-80s, and it was going strong, but, a lot of the people that brought it into this country aren't with us anymore, and it's just not out there anymore. But it is a very powerful diet, and after about 3 months eating this diet, it's like I started to feel like a different person. It's just like I started to detoxify really on a heavy level of just, because there's 50% of the diet was whole organic grains, not cereals and all that. It's like the real grain, the whole. And that nowadays grain has such a bad rap that, because there's issues with, a lot of the grains, with the arsenic and cadmium and all that in the grains. And but there's ways to get around that. But back then, I didn't know about any of that stuff. We just, I just jumped into it. But they want you to chew your food 50 times a mouthful, so you assimilate everything really well and all that grain. But I chewed mine 180 times. I don't know where the 180 came from. But in my mind, I said, I'm going to chew 180 times. If a little's good, a lot's better. So how can you chew food that long? It's just, it becomes like water. But you really assimilate the vitamins and the nutrients and the enzymes. You start to really break down everything, and it's really easy on your digestion. And you're starting to detoxify, and there's 25% of the diet is organic vegetables and all kinds of different cruciferous vegetables and allium vegetables. These are so strongly recommended for anybody that has cancer, and it's good for anybody. But most people don't eat enough vegetables, and we were just saturating our bodies with fiber, which is a prebiotic and very good for cleansing, and also with these vegetables, with all these nutrients, these phytonutrients, and then we were eating beans, little small beans like lentils and chickpeas and adduki beans is what they call adduki beans, and which are these little, most people probably know, but we were eating a lot of those and making different soups and things with that. But we had miso soup every day. And the miso soup, if it's done right, you know, it's like a right way and a wrong way. But if it's done right, it's very delicious and it's very healing because it's got the probiotics, the natural bacteria, and that's 80% of our immunity or more sometimes. And sometimes, a lot of people just don't have a strong digestive tract and their immune system is suffering. And the other thing that's very powerful about that diet was the sea vegetables were really powerful, and they're very high in the minerals and very tumor suppressive, and you know, it's just there's so many things. Everything in this diet is just like targeted for health and especially cancer. And so, you know, nuts and seeds, and I mean, there's a lot to it, but I found it to be very, very energetic for me and detoxifying. And I actually started to gain weight with this. You'd think you wouldn't, but I gained weight, but not, I didn't get heavy, but it was just remarkable for me. And I felt like, you know, like amazing. And I was on this very strict for about 6 years. And then I decided that I needed to widen out a little bit, but that was because I met a teacher that was Dr. Hazel Parcells that lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she was over 100 when I met her, and she died. I think she was 106 when she died, but I think she was probably 101 or so when I met her. But I got to work with her, and I learned a lot of the things that she learned about, and she was, I mean, she looked amazing for her age. I mean, she wasn't in a wheelchair or using a cane or a walker or anything. I mean, she was really amazing and just smart as a whip, 50 years ahead of her time. And she told me, she said, listen, you've been on this macrobiotic diet for all these years, and she says you need to widen out. And I wasn't going to ever eat any kind of animal protein again, but she sort of talked me into it, and I looked at her, and so, you know, I learned that I needed more lean protein, and you know, along with a healthy organic diet. And And I mean, that's kind of where I'm at today. And, you know, it's been a long time like that. But it was amazing the things that I learned about. And I also, along the way, I learned that parasites. And I went to a lecture by Ann Louise Gittleman, which I know you know. And went to a lecture that she was giving, and it was on parasites in your health. And I, you know, a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to go with him, and I went. And she's talking about, you know, people with cancer, a lot of them had parasites, and it was one of the most immunosuppressive things you could have in your body and all that. And I found it very interesting. So after the lecture, I go up to her and I said, Ann Louise, you know, I enjoyed your lecture and all that, but, you know, I've had cancer, and, you know, I'm wondering if I could, maybe I have parasites or have had parasites. And I've had a lot of animals, and I've lived on a farm, and I've, you know, traveled a lot and been to Mexico and all these places that you, which she was talking about, the places that people picked up parasites back then. I mean, you pick them up everywhere nowadays, but probably then too. But that was where a lot of people picked up a lot of the amoebas, and then there's the other ones. But anyway, she suggested that she thought I probably had something just from the way I looked, you know, and I was like, oh, wow, I must not look good. But she steered me to go to this renowned parasitologist in New York City, and I go to this guy, and his name was Dr. Herman Bueno. And I talk about all this in my book, but it's an interesting story. And he says to me, he says, listen, he says, you've got amoeba, histolytica, you got Giardia lamblia, which is a, you know, one-celled organism, both of them. Giardia's, you pick thing, can get this from drinking water out of streams and the mountains, and which I had done. I spent a lot of time in Colorado and in places like that. And he said, you've also got something that's called Ascaris. And he said, Ascaris is none other than roundworms. And you pick that up from your pets or from your animals or from digging in the garden or, you know, in your fingernails. You can get it from salads and things like that that aren't cooked. Well, I'd been eating salads like out of the kazoo. I mean, you know, just eating them every day back in the past, trying to keep my weight down and run, be able to run faster. So anyway, he says he'd never seen a case of cancer or AIDS. Back then, AIDS was kind of, a big thing and still is, I guess, but it was really, you know, kind of the beginning of it. And he said he'd never seen a case of cancer or AIDS that didn't have some kind of parasitic involvement. So I just knew then that, hey, you know, what about all these other people out there that have cancer, you know, and they're not dealing with this? And if it's one of the most immunosuppressive things, then I've got to really look into this more. And so eventually, that's what I ended up doing. I started to get more and more into this and develop my own parasite remedies and started a company that I have now. And for 30 years, I've had a company. And, you know, that was our first product line because I knew how important it was for people other than diet, exercise, and all this vitamin C that I took, which we didn't even talk about. I mean, I took as much vitamin C as I could get, you know, put down my mouth, you know, in my stomach without getting sick from it. And for years, I still take a lot of vitamin C. But I learned that you take a vitamin C that's easily absorbed, one that is most likely time-released. There's a lot of good ones on the market nowadays, and I talk about some of those too in my book. But the thing is you want something that really absorbs. And then nowadays everybody's doing IV vitamin C, which I do from time to time. So back then it was hard for me to get that, but you know, I've done so much, and I've learned so much, and take so many more things and supplements. So I'm kind of more into the diet, detox, and supplementation, and then feed the spirit, you know, develop an attitude, a kind of a, a strong attitude, like if I can't do it, nobody can, and I'm going to give it my all, and that kind of attitude when it comes to your health, and you know, just take one day at a time and do the best you can. If you slip up one day, then tomorrow's a new day. But I'm one of these people that walks around with handfuls of pills, and I've been doing this for, you know, 30 years. So it's helped me. You know, and there's so many things that you can do to, you know, you got to make sure your dental issues are taken care of. You know, if you've got mercury amalgams, because this is one of the oral cavity is one of the biggest toxicity areas in the body, and you know, the root canals you've got to take care of. You got to take care of the any kind of tooth that's pulled, the periodontal ligaments. You got to get rid of cavitations. So you got to find a good biological dentist that knows what he's doing. That's very important, along with all the other things. And I mean, this I can't say enough about it. So that's one of the first things I did. Once I learned about, so I kept looking for new things, and I even did something called Iscador back then for a year. That was I injected Iscador, which is mistletoe, and this was from Germany, and that really helped me a lot because it stimulated my immune system. But I just dug in, you know, and I'm still, I mean, of course I'm very active in the health field with my foundation and Templeton Wellness, and you know, it's my way of giving back and giving people hope and sharing other people's stories similar to mine.
You know, your story, you know, really is inspiring, James. I mean, that was 37 years ago. That was, you know, in a sense, in the wilderness from where we are now and what we know and what the options are.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, you know, it's such an, I really loved hearing your story and your journey. And it's an inspiration on so many levels. But, you know, what really strikes me as so profound is that moment of the deepest despair when you felt like life, you had nothing left to live for, and
mm-hmm.
life was over. And you
right.
had that spiritual revelation, that spiritual breakthrough, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
that was the beginning of guiding you back to a new life,
mm-hmm.
to a purposeful life. And, you know, you've continued to... not only on your own journey of healing and transformation, but have been of service to others through your organization. So let's just take, in the couple of minutes we have left, just tell us about the Wellness Foundation. Tell us about the new project you have with Healthy Restaurants, your Healthy Restaurant Guide. And, we just have a few minutes that we need to just really
yes.
laser in on. Okay.
Yes, well, I created the Templeton Wellness Foundation back in about 2019, right before COVID, and I just got tired of seeing my friends and family and colleagues get cancer and many of them not surviving, and I said, I've got to do something. I've been a survivor for 30 years, and I started the Templeton Wellness, and, and I started to interview people that had stories similar to mine and people that have survived from late-stage cancer. And I started to interview some of the world-renowned doctors out there that have been the pioneers out in the alternative natural cancer field. And because I feel that that's the way that I would go if I had to do it over again. And, these people really have done some wonderful work. So I interview these people, and so that people can get educated really quick on my site, templetonwellness.com. And, I do blogs. I send out lots of blogs, lots of information about things that are in the news, things that I think people need to know about. So it's all about educating people to make better decisions and to let them know that if I can get well and all these other people can get well, then there's no reason they can't too. You know, it's just you got to roll up your sleeves and you got to make up your mind. And sometimes it's the one of the best things that can happen to you. So it's not the end of the world. And don't ever believe that there's nothing else you can do. Now, the other thing that we have on Templeton Wellness is the Templeton List. Templeton List is the healthiest restaurant in America guide. And it's organic, farm-to-table restaurants. We've put together all the ones. We've vetted all the restaurants. There's like between 3,000 and 4,000 restaurants now. And it's a wonderful tool if you're going to be eating out or traveling or going on a vacation. If you've got cancer, I always like to say, and you're really battling for the first 2 or 3 years anyway, you really got to be extra careful. So I like people to eat at home as much as they can once they figure out what diet they need to follow or want to follow and they feel is best for them. But this is a great tool, and when I'm on the road, I've always wanted something like this. So when I'm on the road, we always go to these restaurants almost 100% unless I'm out in the middle of nowhere and there's nothing else. You have to do the best you can, But anyway, it's great. It's templetonwellness.com and templetonlist.com. And I think people are going to find some good information. So if you go to my site and sign up, and we'll send you the emails, and we'll let you know when there's a new video out. And I'll also let you know the 10 things that I do every day to stay cancer-free. So there's some good things, some free things for them, and it's all free. It's all nonprofit, and I don't make a dime off of anything. It's you know, everything that my book sells all go back to the foundation to help as many people as I can. But that's pretty much how it is, how it works.
Well, what an inspiration, James, how you have not only transformed your own life and found a whole new direction. I mean, you know, I know it's a whole new life that you were able to create after this. Right? And it wasn't the beginning.
Sure. Yes.
And now you're able to really be of service to others, to help those who are in that same place of confusion and fear, know that there are resources and there's a place to go for education and support to guide them to their own journey of health and well-being. That's, you know, cancer is not a death sentence anymore. We know that there are so many ways that we can regain our health.
Mm-hmm.
If you're willing, like you were, to be committed to making changes.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So thank you. And I just want to thank you for your inspiration, James, for putting out your book, writing your book, I Used to Have Cancer, How I Found My Way Back to Health. Can they get that book by going to your website, templetonwellness.com?
They can get it at, anywhere. Amazon is probably the best place, of course, or most bookstores. They can also, buy it at unikeyhealth.com, which is unikeyhealth.com also.
Beautiful. All right. Well, I'll put that down in the show notes. And I just wish you many, many, many more decades of great health, James, and great service to all of us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cheryl. It's very nice to be with you today.
Same here. Thank you again. And to everyone listening, never give up. Never give up. Never give up. We have profound tools, resources within us and around us to be guided back to a life that lives that allows us to live in the greatest joy and health possible. So, James Templeton, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you all for listening. Visit templetonwellness.com. Learn more about James's foundation. Get his book, I Used to Have Cancer, How I Found My Way Back to Health. And until next time, build your week with love, peace, and happiness, and always honor the wisdom of your feminine self, I'd like to say. So until next week, be well. Bye for now.